Very familiar psalm, one that we've preached several messages from. It's one of my favorite psalms. There's many that are favorites, but Psalm 46, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, because God is our refuge and strength and very present help in trouble, will not we fear, though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy places of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. As we've said in the past, one of the most amazing features of the Psalms is their relevancy to our lives. They are God designed so that the child of God can very easily make application to themselves and their circumstances. You can put yourself in almost every single psalm, and this is certainly true of this 46th psalm. Like many psalms, it is a psalm that we take assurance in. It's a psalm in which we can find comfort, and strength, security, peace, contentment, can find refreshment, and victory. We find encouragement. We find conviction and energy for our soul. It's a psalm that ought to strengthen our faith and the resolve of every child of God. As you read this psalm, it's easy to see that in verses 1 through 9, the psalmist is speaking. And he's speaking of God. He's talking about God. He's not talking to God, he's talking about the Lord. In verse 10, as we've pointed out in previous messages, that flow is interrupted. And God is not being spoken of, God is speaking. There in that 10th verse, he interrupts the psalmist to just give a reminder of himself. Know that I am God. He's exhorting the psalmist concerning who he is, who God is. It's really the climax of the psalm. And then in verse 11, following God speaking, the psalmist resumes speaking. And though he repeats what he said back in verse 7. I believe he does so now after God speaking. He does so with greater assurance and greater exuberance. So reading this 46th psalm, there's a very orderly flow about it. Consists of three stanzas marked by the word Selah. We see it in verse 3, verse 7, verse 11. all close with that word Selah. Simply a musical pause. Again, the Psalms were songs. It was a musical pause, but more importantly for us, it's a place for the reader to pause and contemplate what has been said. As we've said many times, reading the Scriptures is not a race to see how fast you can accomplish it. We ought to read and then we ought to pause and contemplate, meditate upon what we've just read. So reading this psalm, the being of God is repeatedly declared. In verse 1 and verse 5, we read the statement, God is. In verse 7, we read, the Lord of hosts is. Also in verse 7, we read, the God of Jacob is. And then that is repeat. Verse 7 is repeated, word for word, in verse 11. So six times, it is emphatically declared that He is. God is. No matter what else happens, no matter what else is going on, God is. You couple that declaration of the being of God, and you drop down to verses 2 and 3, and you'll notice the word though occurs four times. Four times. The word though. The word though simply means in spite of the fact. Or it can mean however. Or it can mean nevertheless. So what we have here is God is, though. God is, come what may. God is. All the thoughts do not change who God is. All the those, and God is still who He is. He's never less than who He is. So we're going to speak tonight very briefly on come what may, He is. Come what may, He is. Consider the setting of the psalm. There are several words, there are several phrases that establish the setting of the psalm. Again, the psalm begins with, God is our refuge. That is also stated in verse 7 and is stated again in verse 11. We read there that the God of Jacob, verses 7 and 11, is our refuge. God is our refuge. God is a present tense refuge. Now, the very mention of the word refuge is indicative of several things. It is indicative of a storm. It can be indicative of just about any kind or type of danger. It is indicative of a need. God is our refuge. Present tense. A present tense refuge. So it was a time of danger. It was a time of need. This is the setting of the psalm. He goes on in verse 1 and he says, God is our strength. Indicative of weakness on our part, indicative of inability on our part. So the setting is, it's a time of danger, it's a time of need, and we are weak, and we are unable. He's also referred to there as a very present help. Now that expresses the urgency of the need. A very present help. That is, God is help right now. Is there anybody that does not need help right now? We all do. God is a very present help. God is help right now. Right now when I need it. Help is no good after I don't need it. God is help right now. There's also the word trouble here in Psalm 46 in verse 1. He is a very present help in trouble. Suggestive of pressure, distress, troubles, difficulties, trials, griefs, suffering, burdens. But it's not just trouble. It is in trouble. In trouble. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. That is, when we are surrounded and fenced in with trouble. And again, all of this sets the scene of the psalm. Now, when he mentions the word, when he uses the word trouble, he does not specifically state what the trouble is. The trouble, of course, can come in a great variety. Trouble can come in the realm of the physical. Trouble can come in the realm of the emotional. Trouble can come in the realm of the spiritual. It can come in all three of those forms at one time. But there's a great variety of trouble. And trouble can vary in degree. And trouble can vary in duration. But you see here, whether it be physical, emotional, or spiritual, and whether it be of great degree and long duration or short duration, God is help right now in that trouble. He also mentions in verse 2, he says, therefore, because of what is stated in verse 1, will we not fear? That's the resolve of the psalmist. The very words suggest that it was a time of fear, that it was a time of widespread fear. Also in verse 2 and 3, the psalmist uses the images of the earth and the mountains. Earth and mountains. When we think of those two things, we think of stability. We think of stability. They represent things that we think we can count upon. The earth and the mountains. But as you read verses 2 and 3, the earth and the mountains are moved. And you see, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, it is a picture of that which we think is stable in upheaval. These things are being disturbed. It conveys the idea of a disruption of that which we think is stable. Pandemonium is the picture that we get here. Chaos. Change. The earth is removed and the mountains cast into the sea. Everything around him was changing. He goes on to say, though the waters thereof, that is of the sea, roar and be troubled or agitated, and though the mountains shake, vibrate and totter, are brought into a state of instability, God is. God is still our refuge. God is still is our strength. God is still a very present help in trouble. When the most stable things of life fall apart, God is. God is. In verse 5, he speaks of Jerusalem, and you read the words, she shall not be moved, which indicates that there was the threat of that happening, that Jerusalem would be moved. Verse 6, the heathen raged, speaking of the fury and the wrath, the outrage of the ungodly. And you go on there in verse 6 and you see that the kingdoms were moved, conveying the idea of overthrow. Then in verse 8, there's the word desolations, suggesting a state of emptiness and destruction. In verse 9, there's the mention of wars. It is battles and struggles. You also notice the spear, and you'll notice the chariot. The spear and the chariot, emblems, of course, of enemy power. An enemy force. So this sets the scene for this psalm. And then in verse 10, there are the words from God, I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. Suggesting that God at this time was being discredited. God was being dishonored. So from all of this, we see the setting of the psalm is one of crisis, one of great disturbance, one of danger. Then notice, keep that setting in mind, and notice the focus and the theme of the psalm. You consider everything that we've said thus far in the setting, and consider the entire psalm in its setting. And in this setting, where does the psalmist begin? God is. That's where he begins. God is. Where does he end? Well, read verse 11. God is. He begins and ends with God. Keep in mind the setting. So he begins and ends with the overwhelming fact of who God is and what God is. The theme and the focus of the psalm is not the setting. That's not the focus. That's our problem. Many, many times, the setting of life is our focus. And it's very easy for the setting of life to become our theme, whether it be a good setting, a pleasant setting, or a horrible setting. We have this tendency to focus upon the setting. We have this tendency to make the setting the theme of our life. But that's not what this psalm does. The focus and the theme of the psalm is God. The subject of the psalm is God. The emphasis of the psalm is God. The emphasis when he says God is our refuge, the emphasis is not the storm, the emphasis is God is. When he says God is our strength, the emphasis is not our weakness, the emphasis is his strength. And we see this throughout the psalm. The emphasis is God. So he's not oblivious to reality. He's not oblivious to what's going on around him, but that's not the emphasis. And it's so, so important where we put the emphasis. Where do we put the emphasis? And if the emphasis is not God, we've put it in the wrong place. If the emphasis becomes us, or the emphasis becomes our circumstance, our setting, if you will, we're emphasizing the wrong thing. And if you emphasize the wrong thing long enough, that's all you'll see after a while. But the psalmist is emphasizing God. So the emphasis is not the setting. The emphasis is God. And we see this as you read the psalm. You see the name God occurs 7 times. The name Lord occurs 3 times. The title Most High occurs 1 time. You have the personal pronoun He referring to Him 5 times. And the personal pronoun I referring to Him 3 times. That's 19 references to God. So what the psalmist is doing is he's directing our attention away from the catastrophic happenings, away from the unpleasant setting, to the absoluteness of God. There's a wonderful lesson here for you and I, again, that we do not put the emphasis upon the wrong thing. 6 times is emphatically declared that God is. That's an exhaustive statement. That's an all-inclusive statement. God is. God is. There's no exceptions. It is a statement without bounds. It is a statement without limits. It's perpetual. God is. We can say that tonight, tomorrow morning. If the Lord gives us another day, we can say it again. God is. Tomorrow morning may be completely different than tonight. Circumstances can change. Our setting, we may be in an entirely different setting by tomorrow morning. But that doesn't change who God is. God is. And we're not to put the emphasis upon the setting. We're to put the emphasis upon God. The 4 uses of the word though, there in verses 2 and 3, has no bearing upon who God is. By tomorrow, or even by the end of this night, you may find yourself in a pretty good setting right now. 2 minutes from now, the whole setting can change drastically. But it doesn't change God. It does not change who God is. Verse 5, we read of the gracious presence and help of God. God is in the midst of her, talking about Jerusalem. She shall not be moved. God shall help her. And that right early. That is because He's a present help. Verse 6, we read of the power of His voice. He uttered His voice. He created by just speaking. Let there be light. And there was light. All He has to do is speak. And it is. So we have the power of His voice. In verse 7, He's presented as the Lord of hosts, which simply means He has all authority and He reigns supreme. Nothing can change that. Our setting may change, but it doesn't change that He is the Lord of hosts. It does not change the fact that He is in control. Also in verse 7, He's the God of Jacob. There are many, many titles of God in the Bible. The God of Jacob is one of the most precious. The God of Jacob. What a title. It reminds us that He's a God of grace. Jacob was not a good person. He's a God of mercy. He's a God of love. He's a God of election. God chose Jacob. He's a God of patience. God was very patient with Jacob. He's a God of compassion. The God of Jacob is the one who meets the sinner to bless him, not to destroy him. Remember when God met Jacob on that night. He's the one who goes to great lengths to mold and make something of the sinner, the God of Jacob. He's the one who can overhaul and transform lives. That's what he did with Jacob. He's the God of Jacob. You see, the God of Jacob gives me hope, gives you hope. He's a God of transforming power. He's the one who can bring the sinner to the end of their resources. That's what he did with Jacob. And bring him to a position of surrender. Verse 8, there are the workings of God. Come, behold the works of the Lord. There are the works of the Lord. Then in verse 9, there's the victory of God. And then in verse 10, there is the exaltation of God. And then in verse 11, what is said in verse 7 is repeated. So the psalm begins and ends with God. Remember the setting. And it begins and he ends with God. And everything in between is about God. That should be our life. The emphasis was God. Now think about the tone of the psalm. He's not focused upon the setting. He's focused upon God. Here is a man who's been impacted by God. His life is not defined by his setting. And our lives are not to be defined by our setting, by our circumstances. Our lives are to be defined by God. And the psalmist, as you read the psalm, he's enjoying God. Yes, he's in adverse circumstances, but he's enjoying God. And so you and I can. He's one who is aware of God. In all of our circumstances, we need to always be aware of who God is. He reflects upon God. God is a reality to him, not just some impersonal force, but he's a reality. So the setting or circumstances of the psalm is not what identifies the psalmist. What is it that identifies us? We need to look into that. What is it that identifies me? What is it that shapes my moods? What is it? Well, whatever it is will be the emphasis of your life. People's mood changes as often as their circumstances change. That shouldn't be for you and I, because no matter what the setting, God is the same. The psalm is written with a tone of praise. As you read the psalm, you can't help but see that. It's written in a tone of joy. When God is the emphasis, there will be praise, there will be joy. There's a tone of certainty and confidence throughout the psalm. And I see there's calm. The psalmist is calm. The earth is removed. The mountains are cast. If these were to happen, he can remain calm because of who God is. It's a psalm of worship. As you read it, you see the psalmist is in a spirit of worship. There's a reverence for God. There's faith. There's submission to God. And again, this is all in the midst of a very dire setting. But then you come to verse 10. And there's this interrupting call from God. A reminder from the Lord. Again, the first nine verses, it's very easy to see that the psalmist is speaking. But in verse 10, that changes. Be still and know that I am God. That I am God. God's speaking now. And I believe that as you read this psalm, we can rightly conclude that the psalmist is in a pretty good spiritual place. He's focused upon God. He's speaking of God in a tone of praise and joy and certainty and confidence and calm. He's in a good spiritual place. And we may find ourselves in a good spiritual place, but we still need this. Even when we're in a good spiritual place, we still need to hear God say, I'm God. I'm God. We don't just need God's interruption when we're in a bad place. We need it also when we're in a good place. And it makes the good place better. He says to the psalmist, be still and know that I am God. I believe if we listen, we could hear God saying that just about every day. Be still and know that I am God. If you're always frantic, you need to just calm down and listen. Be still and know that I am God. It's a very explicit announcement, I am God. It's very exhaustive. It's exclusive. I am God. Now, you and I, we believe and we know that God is God. Every one of us sitting here believes that He is God. And we can say with assurance, we know that He is God. But sometimes I need to hear that from Him. I am God. I am God. It serves as a reminder that we're not. But He is. You and I believe and know that He is God. But again, sometimes we need to hear Him say, I am God. There's something very calming about that. I'm God. Thank God for all the times He interrupts our life and just reminds us of who He is. He does it often. Again, we believe and know that He is God. But when He speaks to us and says, I am God, that stirs and inspires your heart. I am God. I am God. There are no words more significant than that. I am God. No words more relevant than I am God. No words more consequential than I am God. What He's saying is, there is nothing beyond me. There is nothing beyond my dominion. There's nothing beyond my control. Whatever your setting is, whatever your setting becomes, He says, there's nothing beyond my dominion. There's nothing beyond my control. There's nothing out of my jurisdiction. Everything is in God's jurisdiction. Everything is in the realms of His control. I am God. We believe and know that. But when He says it to us, what's He doing? Is He not calling us? And again, we might be in a great spiritual place, as I believe the psalmist was here. But He still calls us to a greater awareness of who He is. We always need a greater awareness of who He is. It is a call when He says, I am God. What's He saying to us? Is it not a call for you and I to rely and depend and lean upon Him even more? We might be in a great spiritual place, but He comes and He interrupts and He says, I'm God. In other words, you need to rely and depend upon me more than you are. And you need to lean upon me more. Is it not a call to seek Him more? We might be seeking God, but we can seek Him more. It is a call to come to Him more. It's a call to cleave to Him more firmly. I am God. I am God. It's a call to rest in Him more. And if we would do these things, when our setting changes drastically and suddenly and surprisingly, we can just kind of go along because we're trusting Him. Our setting is never to overcome us. We're to remain focused upon who He is. Sometime, most of the time, I believe God just whispers those words to us. I am God. Sometimes when we are stubborn and obstinate, perhaps He needs to shout them. But the message is the same either way. I am God. Nothing is comforting as hearing God say, I am God. There's rich blessings in those words. There's unsearchable riches in those words. Those words need to grip our hearts. We need to live in the reality of those words. So this is a wonderful psalm. The setting is not a desirable setting, but the psalmist's focus is upon God. Focusing upon your setting will not, guarantee it, will not make your setting better. It will not improve your setting. Focusing upon God may not change your setting whatsoever. But it will sure change your attitude in your setting and your spirit, which in turn makes really the setting better. So God help us to focus upon who He is, upon who God is. And thank God for all the times that He has interrupted our day just to tell us who He is. That's a wonderful interruption. Most of us don't like to be interrupted, but that's a wonderful interruption. We have a great God. We have many, many needs. I want to bring one of those needs to you tonight. And then I'm going to call on a couple men to pray. And then I'm going to close and we'll go home. But we want to pray tonight for Brad and Wendy. They're struggling with what they believe. They need our prayers. God is able. God is able to do what only God can do. We don't need anyone to go from here and gossip. That won't help Brad and Wendy any. But lifting them up before God will. And that's what we want to do. Everybody here loves Brad and Wendy, and they need our prayers. They need our prayers. We're going to call upon